You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 16th of July, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioaryan.com. Well, I'm here on my own today. Max will be back in a couple of weeks. We've got some special guests for next week, but you've just got myself today. And what I'm going to talk about is the Free Tommy Robinson protest that took place on Saturday. Overall, my impressions of it were good. There wasn't any mention of Israel or Jews. There might have been one mention of them, which was about Muhammad killing a large number of them at one point. But that was about it. And I know most people's concerns about Tommy Robinson and about these protests are that they are pro-Israel and pro-Zionist. So it was always refreshing not to hear any of that, really, at this protest on Saturday, until right up at the very end. And there was a bit of a shocking moment right at the very end. There was a very, very good speech by the mother of those three boys that got killed by an Islamic radical, and only been charged with driving in manslaughter, not terrorism charges. And she was speaking at the end, and I guess it must have been another one of her children, and he held up the Star of David flag right at the very end. And you know, I was really quite incensed at that. I thought, what the hell is that flag doing there? Shouldn't that be the Union flag? Shouldn't that be the British flag? And then somebody said, well, they put that up because it drives the Muslims wild. It drives the Muslims wild. That's why they put that flag there. And it really did make me think. It made me think it's so easy to misinterpret people's intentions. Because I was looking at that and I was thinking, well, you know, this is just showing that, you know, they support Israel and this is a Zionist paid for or what have you. But no, it's because they see that flag as insulting Muslims. And really, this just highlights these divisions, which are really just artificial divisions, I think, between the hard right and the soft right. I mean, we all want to stop the invasion of our country. We all want to have free speech laws. We want to do away with these odious hate crime laws that they've brought in. We want to keep the place British. We want to keep the place white. And the main difference between the two is that on the hard right, we see the Jews as being responsible for bringing these Muslims in. Whereas those on the soft right, they tend to see it as, yes, but the Muslims don't like the Jews. Look at what's going on in Israel. Surely these people have a right to their own homeland. We are nationalists. Every nationalist has a right to their own homeland. So we should be supporting these Jews because they are against the Muslims, and the Muslims want to kill all the Jews as well. That's the attitude that you get with the soft right. And they are correct in the fact that Muslims don't like Israel being there in the Middle East, but they're clearly not aware of all the times that Jews have opened up the gates to the Muslim hordes. I mean, that happened in Spain, happened in Bulgaria, happened in Austria, happened in Persia. I know it happened in a lot of other places as well, and it's happened now. I mean, Jews are the ones that are responsible for advocating for refugees to be allowed into our countries. They are the ones that advocate for it. They are also the ones that advocated for there to be laws against inciting racial hatred so that we can't criticise what's going on. They're the ones that advocated for that as well. These people that are on the soft right, the alt-right, or civic nationalists, whatever it is you prefer to call them, I think most of them are unaware of this. They just tend to see what's going on right in front of them. Another comment that you might see is, well, we don't see Jews raping our children. We don't see Jewish rape gangs. We see Muslim rape gangs. They're quite correct. It is the Muslims that are doing this. It is Islamic rape gangs. But it is Jews that have covered up for them. I mean, this main organization that makes this ludicrous charge of Islamophobia against nationalists, which is called Tel Mama. It's essentially a charity, quote-unquote charity, that's been set up to monitor criticism of Muslims. I mean, that's run by a Jew. It's a rabbi and an imam that run Tel Mama. And that's who the Muslims have gone to get advice on, you know, how to clamp down on criticism of them. So what these civic nationalists don't get is, though there may be some friction between Muslims and Jews today because of Israel, for the last 1,000 years, 1,500 years, there hasn't been any friction between them. I mean, Muhammad himself, his mother was a Jew, so that makes Muhammad a Jew. And they're both false religions. And people will say, well, the Muhammad says all this stuff about, or the Quran says all this stuff about the unbelievers being dogs and they can be killed. Well, this Talmud says exactly the same. Talmud says even the best of the Gentiles should be killed. So these are the main criticisms that people on the hard right have of the people on the soft right. And really, we should be getting on. I mean, I think Tommy's done a really great job of exposing what's going on in this country, and he's done a great job of exposing the political correctness and the criminalization of the opposition, which is what's going on. Jez Turner was jailed. Did that make the news? No, that didn't make the news. Alison Chablow was given a suspended sentence. Did that make the news? No, that didn't make the news. Not in a way that Tommy being arrested has made the news, because Tommy Robinson is a celebrity. So the fact that he has been jailed for basically just reporting on what's going on in this country, that's highlighted the fact that we have got people that have been jailed for having the wrong opinions. And now people are aware of it. And I thank him for that. And I thank him for exposing the crimes that are going on, the crimes that the Muslims are carrying out on our streets. So, you know, I support the guy. He wouldn't support me. You know, he's anti-Nazi. But again, I think that's more down to him not actually understanding the facts of history and him just going along with, you know, what he's been taught and what's easiest. And you have to admit that he has managed to get a large movement together, whereas us National Socialists, we're just on the fringes. You know, we only make up probably, 10% out of the whole nationalist movement that there is in Britain. And we haven't been able to galvanise people like they have. So, you know, you have to give him credit for that. And it's when there are protests like this that are going on, and you're watching them on the live stream, that's when you can talk with these alt-like people, because they're going to be there in the stream as well. They're going to be there in the chat room. You can chat to them. You can explain your views to them. You can try and red pill them a little bit more than they actually are. So, you know, it's a positive thing that this goes on. It was very good to see that there was no trouble at this rally, apart from right at the end when somebody tried to hold a bus up. Not hold a bus up by, you know, sort of holding a gun at them and trying to rob them, but just standing in the way of a bus. And the press has been reporting it that the woman in the bus had a hijab on, and that's why this was going on. And I think that was possibly an agent provocateur, because everybody else around the guy was saying, get out the way, let the bus go on. What do you think you're doing? What do you think you're playing at? Because everyone there seemed very, very certain that there was going to be no trouble. He certainly didn't want to cause any trouble. And yet somebody did deliberately try to stop this bus from going about on its normal course. And I would suggest that was probably an agent provocateur. I mean, why else would you do something so ridiculous as that? And the speeches were good. Gerard Batten was excellent. I'm going to talk about him in a minute. They also had Lord Pearson there. Geert Wilders spoke by video. There was less people than there were last time. If you remember last time, there was 20,000 people and we thought there'd be a lot more this time. But the Football Lads Alliance, the Democratic Football Lads Alliance, they sent out a tweet saying that they weren't going to be attending because of the football match. Quite understandable. I mean, a large portion of the support for the Tommy movement does come from football supporters. And, you know, you've got the World Cup on at the moment, so they weren't there. And I think that that does show you just how much of the support comes from, you know, the football lads. The fact that they weren't there, and it looked like there was only about 3,000 or 4,000 people there. So there was about 25%, a quarter of the amount of people that there were last time. And I think what's going to happen is next week, Tommy's got his appeal and the government have got the Lord Chief Justice there, or whatever his name is, obviously the top judge, and they've got three others to go up against Tommy and his lawyer. So I think what they're going to do, they're going to refuse his appeal, and then there'll probably be another protest in August, and I think that one will be huge. That's my predictions anyway. I do hope that he gets out, but somehow I think the British government is just going to ignore public opinion on this. They're far too arrogant to actually listen to the people. There was also an American congressman there. I have to admit, it was the first time that I've heard of him, but he had some good things to say. He was talking about free speech and how we need to have a Bill of Rights that says that we have free speech, or have something put into law that we have free speech like they do have in America, because it is necessary. If you are unable to speak up and criticize certain people, then, you know, those certain people are above the law, aren't they? Basically. But to get back to the actual speeches, Gerard Batten, the new leader of UKIP, every time I see him speak, I am impressed. He's brought UKIP back from the dead, basically. I mean, they are on the rise again, and they've been reinvigorated by people like Sargon joining and Paul Joseph Watson. I mean, this is a good thing. This is a very good thing. I mean, we may see them as, you know, being soft and alt-light, but they're still far better than, you know, people that are supporting Labour or people that support Antifa or even people that are supporting the Conservatives. And Gerard Batten leading them, he's a lot further to the right than Nigel Farage ever was. You won't hear Nigel Farage talking about Islam, and yet you will hear Gerard Batten talking about it. And Gerard Batten doesn't come up with this Nazi nonsense either. In fact, he has complained that children are only ever taught about the Nazis in school, in history, and why aren't they taught about communism? And it's the first time that I've actually heard a mainstream politician pointing that out. And his theory is that they are only taught about Nazis because they were right-wing totalitarian, so then they can say that anybody that is on the right is a Nazi. And they're covering up for communism because the left are communists. That is true, but it's also the fact that the communists were Jewish. That's what they don't want people to find out about. And when Gerard Batten was speaking, he spoke about the rape gangs. He spoke about group identity, you know, the racial thing. He spoke about how the followers of Islam are the ones that are carrying out these crimes, how they view us as non-Muslim. And he also spoke about Theresa May's treason in what she's done with the EU. I mean, that's absolutely shocking what she's done. David Davis, the Brexit secretary, he resigned, and Boris Johnson resigned. And the reason why they resigned is that David Davis, he was supposed to be leading the Brexit negotiations. He'd been working on a white paper. All of them have been working on this white paper, which would have been a proper Brexit. And unbeknownst to them, Theresa May and her cronies had been working on a separate white paper, a secret white paper, which is the one that they brought out. So all the work that David Davis and all the rest of them had been doing was just a ruse. It was just a scam. Well, the real betrayal was being hatched and plotted and hatched by Theresa May. So Gerard Batten is obviously highlighting this. I think UKIP are going to make a big comeback, because we need a coalition to prevent this from happening. And apparently the press are being deluged by letters, by people writing in saying how they've been betrayed, and this is the death of the Conservative Party, and Theresa May is trying to get support from the Labour Party, and the Labour Party aren't even supporting her either. Her approval ratings are minus 30, something ridiculous like that. She has no support from anywhere. And Gerard Batten was highlighting this and the treason that she's been involved in by ignoring all the 17 million people that voted to leave the EU. So that was good. And I do think Gerard Batten is good. And the press have been attacking him for speaking about Mohammed and for speaking the truth. And this is an article from The Independent. It says UKIP's leader has called the Prophet Mohammed a paedophile at a rally for jailed far-right leader Tommy Robinson. Well, what would you call somebody that raped a 9-year-old? Is that a paedophile? Yes, that is a paedophile. Mohammed married a young girl called Alicia when she was 9 years old. And by marriage, what they mean is consummated the marriage, had sex with. He had sex with a 9-year-old girl. That makes Mohammed a paedophile. That's the definition of a paedophile, somebody who rapes children. Now, a 9-year-old girl cannot give consent. A 9-year-old girl is innocent. So you cannot say that he had sex with a 9-year-old. He raped a 9-year-old. Those are our laws. Either we have laws in the West, we have laws in Europe, we have laws in Britain that apply to everyone, or we don't. So what Gerard Batten is doing here, he is speaking the truth. But of course, that's hate speech, because you're not allowed to say things that might incite hatred of a religion. But I guess what he's doing here is he's saying, no, this is a specific person. I'm calling Prophet Muhammad a pedophile. I'm not saying the whole religion is pedophilic. What he's saying is that the Prophet Muhammad was a pedophile. So he's making an allegation about a particular character there who is beyond criticism. As we know, we're not even allowed to draw pictures of him. You're running the risk of being assassinated by Muslims if you do. Continuing with the article, Gerard Batten, an MEP for London, told protesters campaigning for the release of Robinson in London that, quote, rape gang members are predominantly followers of the cult of Muhammad, close quote. I mean, that's really good of him to say that. You would not hear anything like that coming from Nigel Farage. And again, it's the absolute truth. Something like over 80% of these rape gangs are Mohammedans. They are Muslims. And he's saying it's a cult because Islam is a cult. It's following this one leader, this Muhammad. Continuing, in remarks prepared for the rally in London on Saturday, Mr. Batten claimed the founder of Islam was, quote, a pedophile who kept sex slaves, close quote. Again, this is a fact. This is absolutely true. It says in the Quran and in the Hadiths that you can keep sex slaves. If you've got a slave, if you've won a slave in battle, or if you've bought one, you can have sex with them. That's perfectly fine. If it's a non-Muslim, that is, anyone who is a non-Muslim, you can enslave. And Allah has put them in your right hand or whatever it is, so you can have sex with them. So, you know, Muhammad had a whole harem of sex slaves. And don't forget, that's exactly what Islam did. Islam came to Europe. They invaded Europe. They sent out boats, slave ships. They even got as far as Iceland. And they would just ram these boats up on the beach, and they would just run onto the land and grab whatever they could, grab whatever people they could, grab the women, put them on the boat, take them back, and turn them into sex slaves. And very, very brave Christian men, Christian monks and Christian priests would then, at great risk to themselves, they would travel to Morocco in the Middle East and try to buy back these white Christians, because they would hold them hostage, especially if they got somebody that was worth a lot of money. And these brave Christians would go out there at risk of being enslaved themselves, and then they would buy these people back. So this is entrenched in Islam, this idea of sex slavery. And of course, the rape gangs, that's exactly what they are doing. You know, this term, rape gang, grooming gang, that's politically correct. I mean, what this is sex slavery. It's exactly what is outlined as the way to treat the non-Muslim in the Quran. This isn't a new phenomenon, these grooming gangs. This is, you know, a part of Islam. It's just a part of it, and it's always been a part of it. And we shouldn't be shocked that that is what goes on. And when these savages are in court, they say this. I mean, they're not afraid of saying this. They say, well, these white girls aren't Muslims. My culture says that we can treat them like this. This is my culture, is what they say. And a lot of the time, these judges are saying, well, because it's a part of your culture, we're not going to treat you quite as badly as we would do as if it was white people. And of course, this is exactly what's going on, and not just in this. I mean, when Darren Osborne was jailed for running over a Muslim, he was given 45 years for running over one Muslim. 45 years prison sentence for that, the guy got. Whereas people that have, Islamics that have murdered white people, you know, they get half that sentence, less than half that sort of sentence. Continuing, his comments were called, quote, deeply disturbing and worrying by an anti-Islamophobia group. Well, note that they didn't say that they were untrue. And this is the thing, what Gerard Batten is doing, he's speaking the truth. Yet, according to these groups, this is deeply disturbing and worrying. In a speech provided to The Independent by UKIP, I mean, good on UKIP for providing the speech to them, Mr. Batten said, quote, the great British media do not want to talk about the group identity of the rapists or the ideology that inspires them. So you've got two things there. The British media is refusing to identify them as Muslims. It's refusing to identify them as non-whites. It's refusing to identify them as Pakistanis or Bangladeshis or North Africans. And it is refusing to identify what it is that gives them this idea that they should be behaving like that, which is the Quran. It's their religion. That's the ideology that inspires them to do this. And not just the religion. I mean, just non-whites themselves, their whole culture is based around the subjugation of women. And it's based around, if a woman is not with her husband, then that woman deserves to be raped. That's the way they think. And it doesn't matter if they are Muslims or if they're Christians. If they're Negroes that are in Africa and they see a Negress walking on her own and they feel attracted to that Negress, then they will just rape her. The idea of consent doesn't actually come into it. And it's not the religion there. It's just because that's their race. That's their custom. That's always been their custom. So once they're put in among white people in white nations where white women are used to walking about on their own, they don't think they need to be there with their husband or their brother, then, you know, these Negroes just see them as prostitutes, as they're asking for it. They shouldn't be out walking on their own if they don't want to be raped. That's the mentality of these non-whites. So Gerard Batten, I mean, he's been great by pointing out the fact that these are Muslims, these are non-whites, and the ideology, he doesn't go that little bit further and point out that it's their biology that also encourages them to do this, because the races are biologically different. Negroes have different ratios of hormones to white people. You know, they have 20% more testosterone than white people have. And testosterone, you know, it will hijack your thoughts and emotions. If you're a man and you see an attractive woman, it's very hard not to think about that attractive woman. It's very hard to retain control over your thoughts. And these Negroes don't have self-control. They don't understand self-control. They don't understand why anybody would want self-control. It's alien to them to have self-discipline. It's not something that's natural in their culture. It's unnatural. So they're actually behaving in a natural way that becomes natural to them. And obviously, we can't have that going on in white countries. Continuing with Gerard Batten's speech here. The rape gang members are predominantly followers of the cult of Muhammad. They can justify their crimes to themselves because their ideology tells them that non-cult followers are lesser human beings. Well, yes, this is it. It says that we should be paying a tax to them. They should be doing everything they can to get us to submit to Islam. That's what it means. It means submit. Submit to Islam. And if they are raping us, if they are robbing us, if they're doing all these horrible things to us, and yet if we say we are going to follow Islam, then they won't do it. They'll all be lovely to us. So even the Muslims that claim that they don't actually support this, they really do, because they want the whole world to be followers of Muhammad, and that's the way you do it. And this goes back again to the time when they were abducting white people as slaves and taking them to Morocco and Tangiers and Tunisia. If they became Mohammedans, if they became followers of Islam, then they were no longer slaves, and they would be treated well. But that also meant that if one of these Christian priests came out, then he couldn't redeem them. He couldn't bring them back. So a lot of these brave white people, I mean, they held out and they remained as slaves rather than actually becoming Muslims. So, you know, the Muslims themselves, they may condemn this. They may say, oh, it's wrong to have these rape gangs. But at the same time, they're thinking, well, it's not that bad because, you know, it's going to force the white women to cover up. It's going to force them to wear a hijab. And it's going to encourage them to actually become Muslims anyway so that they don't get raped. And one of the differences between Islam and Christianity is that Christianity expects you to follow it out of your own free will. It expects you to look at the way the world is. It expects you to read the scriptures and to use your powers of reason and logic to come to the realization that it's telling the truth and that you want to be a Christian. There's nothing about forcing people to become Christians. And the thing with Islam is it really was brought at the point of a sword. I mean, they would invade a country and either you submit or you become a slave. And with Christianity, it was, we want you to educate yourself so that you can read the scriptures, so you can learn the scriptures, and then you can come to the understanding that you want to be a Christian. I mean, this is why the churches educated people. This is why they set up schools, so that people could understand the faith and understand why they would want to be Christian in the first place. They didn't want people just to be mouthing that they were Christians while not actually acting like them. They wanted people to commit with their heart and soul. Whereas with Islam, it doesn't matter. It's just submit. You will submit. If you submit, that's good enough for them. Mr. Batten added, the founder of their cult was himself a pedophile who kept sex slaves, and he is held up to be a perfect model for them to follow for all time. Again, this is it. The Muslims are supposed to look at Muhammad, look at the way that he behaved, and they are supposed to follow him and copy him. This is why so many of them call themselves Muhammad, because they see him as the ideal man. His behavior is how they should be behaving. And therefore, marrying a 9-year-old girl, raping a 9-year-old girl, that's absolutely fine. Putting people to the sword if they don't become Muslims, that's absolutely fine. Keeping a harem of sex slaves, that's absolutely fine. But beheading people that aren't Muslims, that's fine too. Chopping their hands off, maiming them, castrating them, doing all these horrific things, that's absolutely fine if they aren't Muslims. Continuing, but we, the infidels and kafirs, are not supposed to talk about it, and people who do face possible criminal prosecution under our so-called hate laws. Well, this is just it, isn't it? These so-called hate laws are basically bringing in Sharia law, because in Sharia law, you are not allowed to criticize Islam, you're not allowed to criticize Muhammad, you're not allowed to draw depictions of him. And what our hate speech laws are doing is saying that if we criticize it, then that's hate speech. If we criticize the behavior of Muslims, then that's hate speech. So it's basically bringing in Sharia law by the back door. And it's the same thing with the Talmud. The Talmud says that the Jews should follow along with our laws until they have the upper hand. And once they have the upper hand, then they need to institute Jewish laws. Part of the Jewish laws is that Christianity is idolatry. Christianity should be banned. So, of course, you see them working hard to undermine Christianity wherever they are. And if you look in Israel, you look at the way that the Jews in Israel treat the Palestinians, that's completely in accordance with Talmudic law. Once the Jews have the upper hand, then they can show their true face, as it were. And the Gentiles can be treated like dogs. The Gentiles can be treated like cattle. Everything that the Gentile owns, he only has because he's looking after it until the Jew takes it from him. That's the general gist of the Talmud. So both the Talmud and the Quran, they're both anti-white people, anti-Europeans, anti-Christians. They're like criminal handbooks for criminal gangs, which is what Jews and Muslims are. They are criminal gangs. They are our enemies. They have always been our enemies. And we're told today that we are all equal, yet those two groups of people, Jews and Muslims, we are not allowed to criticize. We are not allowed to criticize them at all. Continuing, campaigning group Hope Not Hate. Interesting, isn't it? They call them a campaign group. The group of slanderers that make up falsehoods about nationalists, Hope Not Hate, called the speech shocking on Twitter, adding that his comments about Muslims were vile. Well, those comments are absolutely true. So, I mean, what Hope Not Hate are saying there is that, yes, it is absolutely vile that Muhammad is a paedophile. Yes, it is absolutely vile that Islamic rape gangs are raping our young girls. Yes, it is absolutely vile and shocking that Muslims think it's perfectly fine to keep sex slaves. So is that what they're saying there? No, they're saying that Gerard Batten is vile himself for actually saying this. So what it's saying here about this is the comments were vile. No, what they actually mean is they think Gerard Batten is vile. It's interesting that they haven't said that it's untrue. They haven't said that these are lies. They just say that it's vile. Earlier this year, Mr. Batten defended calling Islam a death cult, saying the statement was factually and historically true. Well, it is. Now, if you look at all the countries that Islam has invaded and the way that they have treated the indigenous people in these countries, it is a death cult. I mean, just look at what's happening in Islamic countries today. Just in Afghanistan, there was a big suicide bombing that just went off over the weekend. Doesn't matter what country it is. If it's an Islamic country, then you will see suicide bombings going off. Imagine that, somebody strapping a bomb to themselves and you are maimed or killed by bits of human body that have been blasted at you. Well, absolutely twisted. It's a total sick, twisted death cult. So he's completely accurate there. And he says, Mr. Batten took over as interim leader of the UKIP party in February and he was elected in April. Well, he's done an absolutely fantastic job, I would say. From how UKIP looked in February, it really did look that it was completely finished when Anne-Marie Waters didn't get elected last year. That was August last year, wasn't it? Yeah. And then in February, the guy that did take over, he ended up throwing his girlfriend under the bus when she said some racist things about Prince Harry's Negro wife. So he left, he split up with her rather than stand up for her and say, well, these are private comments. So UKIP looked like it was completely done for when Gerard Batten stepped in. And now I think they really are on the up and up. They really are looking good. I mean, he's getting a lot of support. He is speaking to the disenfranchised white working class who need somebody to speak up for them. And much as I like Anne-Marie Waters, I mean, she's very, very dedicated. You know, she will just keep on going and she sticks to that one point. She is very good, but she just doesn't have that gravitas that you need a politician to have. I mean, she's very, very short. She has a very high voice. She's, you know, she's quite feminine in that way. And, you know, we need somebody to lead us. And Gerard Batten, you know, he's quite an alpha character. You know, I mean, he's a big bloke. He's intelligent. He obviously believes in what he's saying. It's a shame that, Anne-Marie didn't just wait that little bit longer until Gerard Batten took over, really. I just hope that for Britain and UKIP don't end up dividing the vote, as it were. Hopefully they'll work together and they won't put a UKIP candidate and a for Britain candidate in the same region of the country, because they do seem to be working together. And that's what we want to see. We want to see a bit of unity. What I'd really like to see is for Britain and UKIP reaching out to groups like the National Front and the BNP and, you know, and the hard right. I mean, we cannot afford to be falling out amongst ourselves just because they're not exposing the Jews. You know, they are exposing the Muslims and they're the only ones that are, and they're doing a damn good job of it. I mean, this protest on Saturday did a really good job of exposing what's going on in this country. Just because they left out the Jewish side, you know, we can't win them all. We really can't win them all. And if you look back at what was going on in National Socialist times, the crimes of the Jews were absolutely obvious. And it was very, very obvious that it was the Jews that were doing this. They were the ones that were walking around with lots of money while the Germans were starving. They were the ones that were buying up all the land, buying up the farms. They were the ones that were in government. They were the ones that were in the courts, and it was quite obvious that it was Jews that were doing this. You know, they were buying up all these stores and having like big supermarkets and knocking all the smaller stores out of business. And what we've got today, people don't see the crimes that the Jews are carrying out. What people see is the crimes that the Muslims are carrying out. And Adolf Hitler said, you know, you've got to make propaganda as simple as possible. And it needs to be so that every class of society can see it. And, you know, the propaganda against Islam, it that succeeds in doing that, because that's what people see. People see people with bags over their heads, people walking around in pajamas. They stand out from everyone else. That's the ones that people see. And it's their crimes that people see going on. So, you know, I like the fact that we expose both of them here at Radio Erin, but I'm not going to condemn people that just expose one or the other, because I see both as helping our cause. I mean, both these peoples are dangerous to us. They are a threat to us. Both of them are non-white, and neither of them should be in our country, and neither of them should have any say in how our country is run. Anyway, I've gone a little bit over time here. I was hoping to have a bit of a music break a little bit earlier than now, but what we'll do, we'll have a music break now, and this is Van Rith, and the track is called Amaru de Trad. was by Van Rith. It was called Amaru de Trad, and you can find them on SoundCloud. And don't forget to check out Eternal Reich's Audio Insurgency on Wednesdays for all the latest nationalist music. Well, let's get back to this demonstration on Saturday, the Free Tommy Robinson demonstration. After Gerard Batten had spoken, Lord Pearson spoke, Lord Malcolm Pearson, who often speaks in the House of Lords, who did a wonderful interview with Tommy Robinson earlier in the year. It was actually the first time that I'd heard of Lord Pearson, and I did think that we didn't have anyone left like him. He is a proper lord that speaks up for the British people. And he made some very good points. And he was speaking by video link rather than actually speaking on the stage there. And he said that there are four issues that we really need to concentrate on. And he said the first one is abrogation. Now, abrogation means the repeal or abolition. And what he means there is, in the Quran, it starts out, and the first verses that Muhammad wrote, or whoever it was that wrote them, were quite peaceful. And they were talking about peace. And this is where this idea comes from, that Islam is a religion of peace. But then the later verses that he wrote cancel out those first verses. And it says to ignore those first verses, and Islam must now be brought forward by the sword, and you can rape and kill the unbelievers, or kill the unbelievers, take their women and take them as sex slaves, which means rape them, basically. Exactly what we see ISIS doing out there in Syria. That's exactly what the Quran says is fine for Muslims to do. And these verses were written much later than the first ones, and they cancel out the first ones. But instead of making the Quran linear, instead of putting the verses in the Quran one after the other as they were written, what they've done in the English versions of the Quran is they've jumbled all the verses around. So instead of getting to the end of it and seeing what Muhammad said at the end of his life, that's all jumbled around at the beginning, and it's all jumbled up, which means that it's possible for the British politicians to say, oh yes, but Islam is a religion of peace. Look, there's this verse here at the beginning, there's this verse here at the end that says that it's peaceful. And they don't realise that all those verses have been superseded by the later ones. And if you're actually reading the Quran in Arabic, it's the right way round. But the English translations have all been politically corrected to mislead people. So that they think that these verses, that it is actually peaceful. Now, of course, Tommy Robinson brought out a version of the Quran, which is actually in the correct order. You know, I do recommend people get a copy of that if they want to learn about it. The second thing that Lord Pearson spoke about is taqiyya, which is deception, which is to say that it's absolutely fine to deceive unbelievers. It's absolutely fine to lie to non-Muslims. And this comes up in courts because we expect people to tell the truth in court. We expect people to swear on the Bible, and we'll even say to them, you can swear on the Quran if you like. We expect you to tell the truth. But the very book that they are swearing on when they swear on the Quran tells them that they can lie to the non-believers. And again, this has parallels in Judaism. In Judaism, they have the Kol Nida, which is a prayer that they say once a year. And it's not a prayer asking for forgiveness for breaking oaths or lying to people. It's a prayer asking for future forgiveness of lying and breaking oaths. It's a prayer that basically asks the Jewish God to allow them to break their oaths. And this, how can anybody see that as a religion or see that as anything that's positive? This is called the Kol Nida prayer that the Jews do once a year on Passover. I mean, what does it say in the New Testament? It says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. And what does it say in Judaism? It says you can lie as much as you like to non-Jews because they are non-Jews and God isn't going to punish you for it. All you have to do is say this prayer once a year before you actually do the lying, of course, and then you won't be punished for it. And that's exactly the same as the Quran, which is this taqiyya. It's absolutely fine to deceive non-Muslims because they are non-Muslims. The next thing that he pointed out was Al-Hijra, which is apparently Muhammad's example when people are supposed to follow Muhammad's example. What his example was taking over a town and saying to them, either you will pay the tax to us, the dhimmi tax, and you'll become slaves, or we'll kill you. And that's exactly what they did, and they killed people. And one of the main instances of this that the civic nationalists will bring up is the fact that he killed hundreds of Jews when he came to this town. And the reason why he killed the Jews is because he wanted their money. He wasn't killing them out of any ideological problem with them. As I said, Muhammad's mother was a Jew, which meant that he was actually a Jew. I mean, Jew is a race. Jew is a race. They may claim that it's a religion, but you get atheist Jews. Jew is a race. And Muhammad was of the Jewish race, although he was following his own made-up religion of Islam. And this example is how the Muslims still operate today. That's the way that they operated in Syria. You'll notice that what they did, what they do to Christians in Syria, what they did to the Yazidi tribe, these Yazidis who weren't actually Christian, but they were another religion. And because they were another religion, they took them all as sex slaves, took them all as prostitutes and used them as prostitutes, sex slaves. And that's the same as what they do with the grooming gangs in Britain. This is Islamic behavior, and it's condoned by Islam. And the fourth thing that he points out is Sharia law and how that is sneaking into British society, particularly with the hate crime laws, particularly making it illegal to criticize Islam, illegal to criticize Muhammad. That is Sharia law. The British government may not call it Sharia law. The British government may call it incitement to religious hatred, but that's what it is. It's saying, you know, you cannot criticize this one religion. It's absolutely fine for you to criticize Christianity. In fact, they encourage you to mock Christianity, and they've banned us from, you know, although they will try to ban us and prosecute people for reading out verses from the Bible that criticize homosexuals. You know, I doubt whether you're not going to be prosecuted for reading out verses from the Quran, of course, but unless you are a nationalist, because then if you're reading them out, then that's going to be hate speech, isn't it? But it's perfectly fine for the imams to read out these verses about turning non-Muslims into sex slaves in their madrasas and in their mosques. That's absolutely fine. But the problem with Lord Pearson is that he still sees it as an ideological problem. He doesn't understand that it's a racial issue. It's a non-white issue. This religion of the non-whites, this Islam, that is a reflection of the Arab's soul, the racial soul of the Arab, who is a mongrel anyway. The word Arab is Hebrew for mongrel race. Of course, that was written at the time when the Israelites were not a mongrel race, obviously, or they would not have used this word Arab to describe the Arabs. But nowadays, of course, the Jews are a mongrel race. They come into the same category as the Arabs. And the two religions are very similar. Judaism and Islam, both very similar. They were both rejected by Christianity, both rejected by the Christian God. And they're the enemies of Christianity. But these religions are reflections of the race themselves, that the religion didn't create the race. The race created the religion. And this is a problem that the soft right has, basically. They see things as ideological problems rather than as racial problems. The next person to speak was Tommy Robinson's cousin, Kevin Carroll, I believe his name is. And he gave a very good speech. He was one of the few people to mention the Nazi threat. And what he was saying is that this Islamic invasion is far greater than the Nazi threat of the Second World War. You know, which it is. The so-called Nazi threat of the Second World War, I mean, there really wasn't one. It was Britain that declared war against Germany. It was Hitler that made over 20 offers of peace to try and stop the war to Britain, and it was Britain that ignored them. It was Britain that jailed Rudolf Hess and kept him in jail for the rest of his life when Rudolf Hess bravely jumped out of an aeroplane on a peace mission to try and stop the war you know, it was Britain that pushed forward that war against Germany, not the other way around. And we lost the British Empire for doing so. You know, we had the greatest empire the world has ever seen, and Churchill lost us that by going to war against a country that never wanted to go to war with us, never wanted to invade Britain. All Germany wanted was to have to be reunited with its German people in its German territories that had been taken from her after the First World War in the Versailles Treaty. Hitler had no intentions of invading the rest of Europe. He liberated the countries that he did go to. They were liberated. They were liberated from the Rothschild banks. They were liberated from Freemasonry. And they were nationalist countries. How can anybody not like nationalism? Nationalism means standing up for your own people. And if you are not going to stand up for your own people, then who the hell is? Who else is going to be standing up for you? Nobody. We have to have nationalists. It's just common sense. People that aren't nationalists should look at that and think, well, why is the media against these guys? These guys love their people. They want what is best for me. So why on earth is the media against them? Why is the British media against nationalists when nationalists want the best for Britain? It's, it's absolute nonsense. Well, they also had Philip de Winter there, who was from Vlaams Belang, a Belgian politician. He was very good. He was talking about the failure of multiculturalism, about how the British government is collaborating with the enemy within and how that is happening all over Europe. This hostile Islamic takeover of Europe is happening in every European country. There are the equivalent of hate speech laws in every European country. How mass immigration is the Trojan horse that is destroying the West. And how Donald Trump is saying what the UK politicians don't dare to. And that really hit home with me, because at that recent Donald Trump press conference with Theresa May, I think she really, really benefited from that press conference. And you could see that she was really impressed and in awe of the way that President Trump dealt with the journalists, especially with the bit where CNN were asking him a question and he was saying, well, I'm not answering you. You are fake news. And you could see the look on her face. She loved it. Big smile on her face, you know, laughing. You could see that, she just wishes that she had the courage to speak to them in the way that he does. And Theresa May, she's got one way out of this, and that is to get on the Trump train. And if she doesn't, she's done for, and Britain is done for. And she's got these dreadful advisors that told her that she should have put in for an election when it was obvious that she didn't have any support, and she listened to them, and her hubris got her to put on this election, and she lost miserably, lost her mandate. And now, again, you've got these advisors telling her, don't listen to Donald Trump, don't listen to the Brexiteers, you need to stick with the EU, otherwise everything's going to go wrong. And she's listened to them, she's stuck with the EU, and now her approval rating is minus 37. She's hemorrhaging Conservative Party members by the day. Her top Brexit guys have resigned from the party. And it looks like she's going to fail. But you can see that there's still, you know, she's still got that spark there where she wishes she could be like Donald Trump, but she just doesn't have the balls to do it. She's a woman. She's not capable of doing the job that is needed. Women are not good negotiators. And this is a fact. And this comes from the feminists themselves. They will say part of the reason for the pay gap between men and women is because women are not good negotiators. They don't negotiate to get more pay. And who have we got negotiating between us leaving the European Union? Theresa May, a woman. So, of course, she's going to balls it up, which she has. Anyway, after Philip de Winter, we had the video, and we had Geert Wilders speaking by video. And his speech at the last one was very, very good, very inspiring. He really got the crowd going. And in this one, it was just by video. And the reason why it was by video is because Britain, the Home Office, refused to give him a security detail. Unbelievable. The man is a target for Islamists. He has had to have an armed security detail for at least the last 10 years, following him around everywhere. And this is exactly the same as Salman Rushdie. I mean, we provide this for Salman Rushdie. He's got a fatwa on his head. He has armed security with him, armed police with him at all times. And he's not limited just to Britain. I mean, he travels all around the world with his security. And yet, Geert Wilders, they refused to give him British security. And on top of that, they refused to allow him to bring over his own Dutch security to do the job. If the British government was not prepared to guarantee his safety, then why wasn't he allowed to just bring his own Dutch people over? And they refused to allow that as well. I mean, that is obvious bias. This is how the British government works. They just want to silence the opposition, which is, what they were doing by that, by dirty tricks, basically. And the gist of Geert Wilders' speech was shame on Theresa May. She did not do anything against the mass rape of the British people. She betrayed our trust. And he's perfectly correct there. She's a traitor to the British people. She's always been a traitor to the British people. She was the one that let all these immigrants in the first place. She was the one that opened the borders. The Conservative Party said, we are going to reduce immigration to 10,000 people a year. And it was 10 times that number, more than 10 times that number. It was hundreds of thousands of people that she allowed in, and she didn't stop them at the borders. And on top of that, she was the first Home Secretary to start banning nationalists from coming into Britain to speak to us. She banned Matt Heimbach from coming into the country. She's banned Richard Spencer from coming to visit. I think she's even banned one of these Baptist pastors in America, the guy that did Marching to Zion. She's even banned him from coming in. And of course, under Amber Rudd, her apprentice, they banned Brittany Pettibone and Martin Selner, Lauren Southern, and of course banning the nationalist youth group National Action and designating them as terrorists. And this all comes from people that learnt from Theresa May. Amber Rudd learnt everything she knows, she learned from Theresa May because she worked in Theresa May's Home Secretary department before she was made Home Secretary. And now who have we got as Home Secretary? We've got the son of a Pakistani bus driver, Sajid Javid. And he's the man that is responsible for Tommy Robinson being in prison, and he is the man responsible for not giving Geert Wilders his security detail. That's the man who it falls to, is the Home Secretary. Again, this is a very good thing that Lord Pearson said he was doing. He was writing to the Home Secretary and saying, you know, if anything happens to Tommy Robinson, we will be holding you responsible. You are the one we will be suing and taking to court. And again, it wasn't just Lord Pearson that has had words with the British government. The final person on the stage was Paul Gosar, who is a congressman from Arizona. And he said, you know, words had been said. This has been brought up with the British diplomats. I think it was somebody responsible for religious freedom, saying that, it's religious freedom means freedom to criticize religion as well as freedom to practice religion. And Tommy Robinson was not free to criticize Islam. He's certainly not free now. He's in prison. So this Paul Gosar was speaking at the end. I think that was a big surprise for the people that were there to see an American congressman there. They also had a member of parliament for the Sweden Democrats. And he seemed very good. I mean, I've heard the Sweden Democrats are a little bit alt-light. Perhaps they've changed direction, because he did seem very good indeed. I mean, he was talking about hate speech laws, how the UK election system is rigged, how we are very lucky here to actually have a movement instead of a political party. So that's what separates us from the rest of Europe. You may have these nationalist parties in Italy or in Austria, And what we have here is a nationalist movement, and we have more and more people that are joining it by the day. And of course, there was also somebody from the Front National there. They were all good speeches. They were all very good speeches, and it was very good to see the people went there. Hopefully Tommy will win his appeal this week, but if he doesn't, then there will be another one. And if there is another one, I think you're going to see tens of thousands of people at the next one. And I say, I think the numbers at this one were probably just under 10,000. Anyway, I've gone slightly over time. So thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, we do require your donations to keep the website going, keep the radio network going. You can find a Bitcoin wallet on every one of our articles and in the sidebar at radioarian.com. We will have special guests next week, and I will probably be back the week after that with Max Musson once again. And of course, I do hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
Radio Aryan, for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.